Hello again, this is Gary Williams from the EFTUniverse.com, and now we're going to explore why EFT sometimes doesn't work and other important aspects of using the process. Rick Wilkes and Kathy Vartuli, they talk about why we feel unsafe about moving beyond our limitations, especially with weight issues and other things that may be holding us back. Kathy and Rick also share some of the important questions we need to ask to get into the reasons why we are stuck with EFT. Carol Look shares her thoughts on why EFT may not be working with some clients and how they are not focusing on measuring their results, and also why being bland and too global doesn't help to get good results. Carol also has other ideas why EFT might not be working for you, including the subject of trust and feeling safe. Emma Roberts looks at how blocks can hold us back and what you need to do to get moving again, including working on psychological reversal, and how we need to be specific and actually break down the pieces of your problem and pacing your work with a client. Also, the importance of working with an experienced practitioner. Also, Maggie Atkins talks about working with a skilled practitioner when we're stuck, and also how writing things down can help during the process, and how some issues may be too big and need to be broken down. Maggie also discusses using constricted breathing and gives us a process that you can use when getting stuck in some way. Brad Yates talks about getting unstuck by using the emotional freedom technique, and Jackie Crooks gets us started by talking about drinking enough water to help us with our energy system, and also other hints and tips on how to make your session work better, including really listening to your client and using their words within a treatment. Also, how to help your client get beyond their limiting beliefs with EFT. Here's Jackie.
Well, when EFT appears not to work, there's always a really good reason for it. And what you're actually going to be doing is doing some detective work as to why it doesn't work. The first thing I would do with any new client is to make sure they drink some water before you start.
Right.
Because if people are dehydrated, the body's electrical system isn't working properly. The messages don't go around properly. And therefore, the changes that you're trying to create with EFT don't happen.
Right. I mean, we often...
I train my clients to drink water. They drink water before they come. I prompt them to drink water all the way through the sessions. Yeah. And the important thing is to remember to let them know they can go to the loo if they need to.
Right. Yeah, because we don't really drink enough water anyway, do we? Full stop.
People often don't, no. But I have to say it's one of the things I do train my clients into doing. And, you know, as they start shifting things, they start noticing how thirsty they are. And, you know, by the second session, they're reaching for the water automatically. But it's really good to make sure that people are well hydrated. And also that they continue to drink water well for the next several days. Because EFT continues working after the session.
Yeah.
So, you know, for the next 2 or 3 days, things are still trying to find their new place, still trying to settle down. And they need to be hydrated to let that process complete. Otherwise, things get stuck, and then you're back to square one again, which is a bit of a waste of everybody's time.
So
water would be the first thing that I would look at. I'd then be looking at, am I on the target or not? You know, EFT works by you being very specific. And generally speaking, if you're not specific enough, then you're not going to be getting things shifting very quickly. If you're absolutely on the bullseye when you're working with a client, they'll go from 10 to 0 in one round.
Right.
And that's often when you can get the apex effect, because the change happens so quickly, they forget they ever had the problem in the first place. It's one of the reasons that scaling things 0 to 10 is really useful.
Yeah.
Because then you can say to clients when they go, oh yes, well that was in the past, it's not a problem now. You can say, well actually, 2 minutes ago when we looked at this, it was a 10.
Yeah.
So that's when you've been really specific, actually really listened very clearly to your client's words and used your client's words with their intonation. Because one of the ways of being spot on target with a client is to listen carefully to what they say to you and to listen to the words that have that emotional charge to them. So, you know, if a client says, you know, when he said that to me, I was so pissed off.
Right.
You're tapping on, even though I was so pissed off, you're likely to be on the bullseye, because those words with that intonation represents that energetic feel to the client.
Right, and they have power, don't they, words as such? They resonate.
They really do. So the more you can really be careful and listen to the clients, use their words, repeat their words back to them with a similar intonation, the easier it's going to be on target with the client. And sometimes, you know, you're just not quite in the right place. You know, if you're letting your head rule you rather than your intuition, you can start thinking, this has happened, so it must mean this. It's really important when you're doing EFT not to make assumptions like that, to have a sense of curiosity.
Yeah.
So rather than this means this, you could go into it with I've got this, and I wonder if it might mean this. That's then leaving you open to other possibilities that may pop in.
Right.
So the client often has the answers, and sometimes it can be really useful to say to the client, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, we're doing this and this isn't working as quickly as I expected. Is there a better way we could get at this? Or is there something in the way?
Yeah.
What's coming up for you? The client will often come up with the answer for you just by asking, so long as you say, if you had to guess, rather than ask a direct question. And of course, you can use the feelings in the body to help you get really accurate. So where's that feeling? What colour is it? Is it hard or soft, rough or smooth? Which also will keep you on target. So those are ways of staying on target. Sometimes you're tapping on a statement that you think is as specific as you can get, and you know that you're in the right area, and it's just not quite shifting as quickly as you'd like. I'll often say to a client, you know, I've got this down to as specific a statement as I can do, and it looks to me as though it may still be a little bit too big and it needs breaking down into an even smaller step. If we were going to do that, how do you think we could do that? And then often they'll come up with something that to me as an outsider sounds almost identical, but somehow they have a different energetic quality to them. And you tap on those two separate steps and everything just clears completely. You're one of the analogies Gary uses about being very specific is, if you have a whole bundle of twigs and you're trying to break them all in one go, it's really hard to do that.
Right.
If you untie the bundle and break each twig separately, although it appears that that may take longer, it actually doesn't, because it's quick and easy to do each one. So you can take a statement and actually break it down into smaller chunks. But then, of course, there's all the stoppers, all the things that are going on for the client that might make letting go of whatever it is you're working on not seem like a good idea to part of them.
Right, right. Is that when we get stuck as such, then, or we believe we're stuck?
Yes. You know, if clients are really angry with somebody, you know, if something traumatic's happened at some point and they're still holding a lot of anger, if a part of them thinks they're not going to let go of that anger until that other person has acknowledged what they've done, then the client is going to hang on to whatever it is that's going on. And they're not doing that on a conscious level. You know, they're not going, I'm holding on to this till they apologize.
Right.
But there may be a childlike part of them that is still doing that. So you can put things like that into the statements, usually with something like a maybe, or it's possible, so that the client can then go in and check whether it's possible without feeling that you're telling them what's going on.
Right.
So it's not black and white, part of me may not want to let go of this anger, because it may think the other person doesn't deserve me to do that.
Yeah.
I deeply and completely accept myself. And then, of course, you can go into the level 3 reframes. You know, even though they may not deserve me to let go of this anger, maybe I deserve not to carry those people with me for the rest of my life.
Right.
It's one reframe.
Yeah.
Or maybe the person that's suffering here is me. Or maybe I deserve to be free of all these feelings. So you can put in reframes there to give that part that wants to hold on a really good reason to do something different.
Yeah.
Sometimes if they're angry with themselves, or if they're feeling guilty, they think that they can't let it go because then they might make the same mistake again.
Right.
So again, it's noticing what's going on for the client, noticing what the languaging is, and having a guess what might be going on and putting that in with a possibility.
Yeah.
So even though I'm so angry with myself, I don't believe I deserve this to let this go. I deeply and completely accept myself. Even though a part of me may think I never deserve to let this go, I'd like that part to understand that I do.
Right.
And sometimes that can be enough just to settle down that part that's fighting.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there, of course, there's all the what ifs. So, you know, what would happen if I let this go? You know, people might not like me, my partner might not know who I am, all the identity stuff. If I let this go, who will I be? How will I live my life? I won't know what to do anymore. So all those things can be going on because, you know, a part of you is trying to keep you safe. All those things that stop us changing things are all about keeping safe. It's all about survival.
Yeah.
So it's identifying what your client's particular survival techniques are can be really helpful.
Right. And you're kind of coping then with things, aren't you, by being stuck and not releasing the things. Is that right?
Mm. It's the comfortably uncomfortable. I know what to expect here. I might not like it, but I know what to expect. I know what to do about it. And, you know, if you're working on, say, relationship issues, then it is difficult for people because you're no longer the person that other people knew if you're not doing what you've always done. So there is a period of adjustment, and there is a chance that some people will move into your life and some people will move out of your life. Not by any conscious means, but it just happens. You know, the law of attraction says like attracts like, and if your vibration is different, then you'll be attracting people with a different vibration. So, you know, if you're working on relationship issues, as you clear your relationships stuff, it's possible that other people don't clear theirs, and therefore the vibration doesn't match.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, the other possibility is that they then change their vibration to match yours,
right,
and you both work on a much higher level.
Right. So it doesn't necessarily mean you've got to move away from that person as such.
Not necessarily.
You will do. Right.
Sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
You know, often relationships can go through lots of mini breakdowns and rebuilds as one person starts to change, you know, their coping strategies.
Right. And a lot of people that first get involved with EFT or even come to people as clients as such, you know, they seem to be quite overwhelmed and they can't pick these things apart, can they?
No, and it is a process of elimination, really. It's I see it as being a detective, you know, being a detective when I go into things. I go into any EFT session absolutely knowing that EFT will make a difference. What I don't know is how or when.
Right.
Or how long it'll take me to find the way to do that. But just absolutely knowing that it's possible gives me the persistence to keep going, to keep trying different things. I think the important thing is, if something's not working, do something else instead.
Yeah.
So if you're tapping on, even though I'm really angry, I'm okay, and it's not shifting things, then do something else. Don't do more of the same thing.
Yeah.
I might say, if there was a better word than angry for what you're feeling, how would that be? What would that be? It might be rage. It might be fury. You know, and those words would have much stronger emotional impact on the client. So then I'd try doing it with those words.
Right.
You can link the feeling with the event. So even though I'm really angry because my dad did whatever it is, I deeply and completely accept myself. So you're getting even more specific for the subconscious.
Yeah, yeah.
It can see it's this feeling linked to this event.
Right.
And that's what she wants to work on.
And you're picking out all the different aspects.
Yes, yes. And for me, the body feelings, the colour, the shape, the texture, is always a really powerful way to go. If you're stuck, focus, and you're not sure where to go next, focus on where they're feeling that feeling. Put that description in the statement. So even though I've got this hard red knot in my chest, I deeply and completely love and accept myself. Even though when I think about what my dad said, I've got this hard red knot in my chest, I'm okay. Because that gives you a breathing space. You're not having to put your conscious mind into what's going on. You're just going on with what's going on for the client. And it will shift something.
Right.
You may not know what, but it'll shift enough for you to then go in and start doing a bit more exploring. And sometimes you don't need to. Sometimes just the colour shape will do the job all on its own.
My thanks there to Jackie Crooks. And now more about getting unstuck using EFT with Kathy Vartuli and Rick Wilkes.
I think a lot of times we may be focused on a particular issue, say, for instance, wanting to lose weight. And we tap and we tap and we're not moving forward with it. A lot of times there are underlying fears and blocks, and there are a few questions we can ask that can really bring that out. The first question we like to ask our clients is it really safe to move forward? So staying with the weight analogy, is it safe for you? Does it feel safe in your body to lose weight? And a lot of times the answer is no, it doesn't feel safe. If we can tap on why it doesn't feel safe, well, the men will start asking me out and I don't know what to do, or someone might attack me. If we start addressing those underlying issues, it can feel safer to lose weight, and then we might move forward.
Right. So is that stuckness then helping you in some way to discover more?
Definitely. It helps identify core issues that could be holding us back. And it is there to try to protect us. The stuckness is often there as a sign that there's something more that needs to be addressed. Another question we often ask is, do you deserve to get this? Do you deserve to move forward? And if we don't feel like we deserve it, if we were told you don't deserve to be happy and the weight is keeping us unhappy, we might be holding on to it because we believe that lesson.
Right. And if somebody just feels stuck and they're kind of confused by that, how would we help them forward with the tapping?
Well, I think that tapping can help, but also just being aware that there are these questions to ask. If you have never even thought about how it might not be safe to lose weight, and you ask yourself that question, you've opened up a doorway into the energetic reasons, the emotional reasons why maybe you've yo-yoed your entire life. I remember asking someone who had plateaued at a particular place, if you were to imagine being 15 pounds lighter, do you feel safe in your body? And I had her close her eyes, and she imagined herself 15 pounds lighter. In her own imagination, she started feeling unsafe, like she'd have to be. And I said, well, look at yourself. What's happening? I'm having to look around all the corners. I'm having to, Well, if you've never asked yourself that question, you won't have that insight. That's one of the roles of coaches, is to ask questions that people weren't aware of. But now, as people become thinking about, I'm making this progress, I'm stuck, what are the questions to ask? And as Kathy said, is it safe to move forward? Do I deserve to move forward? And what's the third one, Kathy?
Who would I be if I moved forward? If we don't have a clear understanding of who we might be, if we'd feel like a different person and we don't know if that's safe or good, it can hold us back.
And so sometimes, Gary, those are intertwined in ways. For example, the person who is comfortable being the jolly fat person may not be comfortable at all with being the sexy athletic person. They would not feel like they're the same person.
They may not know how to act as that other person, as a different person.
Right, and if they've been that way for a long time as well, it would be kind of difficult, wouldn't it, to become somebody else.
Well, think about the smoker, right? All of his buddies are smokers. His boss is a smoker. I worked with one client where he said he wanted to stop smoking, but he wasn't making any progress. He had tried everything to stop smoking. And I said, well, who would you be if you were a non-smoker? And he thought about it. And he said, I'd be the one guy left behind in the office when everyone else went out to take a smoke.
Yeah.
And he was not willing to be the one guy left in the office when everyone else went out to get a smoke.
We may have strong limiting beliefs about who we would have to be if we were so, like, for instance, one client thought that if she had money, she would have to be very upstanding and spend a lot of time with charities. I mean, she had all these rules. So she had lots of resistance to getting financial abundance. Once we tapped on those issues and she realized she would have the choice, it was much easier for her to flow forward on that.
Right. So in a sense, you keep yourself kind of a prisoner in where you are, and the border is kind of closed on you, even though freedom is on the other side.
That's a great analogy.
That's why we call them comfort zones, too. You know, there's if your comfort zone is so tight, it can feel like a prison, right? And that's where people have a lot of desperation to break free. There's a lot of asking on their part. I need to be free of this prison that is around me. Well, that's great. That'll take you from suffering to okay. Now you can be grazing in the field, so to speak, but if you want to run free, there's an entirely different level of rules that you may are and will run up against. As soon as you expand your comfort zone, you come up against specific events, certain limiting beliefs, rules that you have about who you must be if this happens for you. And that's one of the things that's beautiful about tapping, is that you can shift those beliefs. Because a belief isn't just a thought that you can write down. You can write down a new affirmation and repeat it every day for 30 days. But if you feel that you would be betraying your ancestors if you made this change, you'll block yourself. You'll get stuck at some level. Some people can use willpower to force their way outside of their comfort zone, but oftentimes that's the yo-yo effect. And it's a yo-yo effect that you see in weight loss, obviously. That's an obvious one because it's very physical. But you see it emotionally as well. You see it financially as well. The person that does really well and they spend it all and end up even more in debt than they were. That's a sign that you've got rules that you're energetically stuck on. And by asking those questions, what about being outside that old comfort zone makes me feel unsafe? Do I feel like I deserve it? Right? And
who would I be?
Who would I be? My identity. How is my identity wrapped up with where I am versus who I would be if I was more expansive?
So is this why, you know, you get people that win the lottery and then suddenly they just spend everything and it's all gone within, you know, a very short time?
I think it's interesting that, at least in the States, the last study I saw said that 50% of the people that win the lottery end up bankrupt within 5 years.
Right.
If they don't think they really deserve it, if they don't feel safe having the money and they don't know who they are, or any one of those, or in combination, they're going to get rid of that money so fast.
So tapping can help you not only win the lottery, but keep the money as well.
Well, for me, the energetic approach, Gary, is about taking a natural, practical... I'm a practical person, okay? It's nice to win the lottery, but I believe that as people learn to become more resilient emotionally, as they expand their comfort zone, opportunities will become available to them that they never would have even looked at before. Not only would they reject it as being a breaking a rule, but they would also not be attractive to their co-creators. As we expand emotionally, as we start looking at freedom and flexibility, curiosity, bringing playfulness back in. You can't be playful if you feel that being playful is not serious and you need to be serious, because if you're not serious, then everyone will reject you, and if everyone will reject you, then you'll be dead. Those are the things that we can decide as a child based upon a trauma. Tapping helps us clear those so that we can be playful and curious. You're allowed to be the dummy, because we're all dummies when we start things, right?
Yeah.
And if I want to learn how to paraglide, I don't know anything about it. But if I'm emotionally free, I can be curious. I can say I don't know without it being a loss of faith. Imagine if everyone listens, you know, if you can learn something new and be incompetent when you start and not feel that it says anything negative about you, well, you are free to explore a wide range of things. You're not going to be stuck in the same routine. But believe you me, if you know in your gut that it's not safe to try new things and to seem incompetent, if that's the rule you have, you won't try new things. You won't meet new people, because you will be stuck. And that's where going back to those three questions, is it safe, do I deserve it, and who would I be, allows you to start getting deeper into what is really restricting you emotionally, energetically.
So you'd be coming out of your comfort zone then as such, and that would give you a kind of feeling, wouldn't it? And if that feeling comes, does that mean we should be getting excited then because we're actually going to be learning new things, etc.?
They can be, it can be a great sign. If you run into resistance, instead of thinking, damn, I ran into another problem, yeah, I found another place I can clear old energies and give myself a lot more freedom and enjoyment out of life.
Right.
And if people run into problems with these questions, they're deep questions, and it can sometimes really help to get an outside opinion, either with a coach or a friend, someone that you feel safe sharing with, because sometimes we are used to looking at things in a certain way. It may seem obvious to a person that you have to be, if you're financially abundant, you must follow certain rules. If you start talking with someone else, they can say, well, I never followed that rule. We're, you know, that doesn't seem logical to me. But until we get outside of ourselves, it may just seem like the way things are, and we can stay stuck that way.
Because all rich people are meant to smoke cigars, aren't they, and to be mean to everybody.
Exactly,
right?
And run people over with their fancy cars.
That's it, yeah. So tapping can help us to really move out of our comfort zones and, if you like, almost become somebody else. Is that right, or a right way of putting it?
And it can also help us feel comfortable where we are, too. I want to make the point that while it's wonderful to explore and expand your comfort zone, part of your comfort zone is also, am I okay right here, right now?
Yes.
And sometimes people start feeling, quote, stuck because they're not changing the world. They're not changing their world. They're not suddenly becoming what they dream of. That journey of becoming may take 10 years, 20 years. If I wanted to become a concert-level pianist when I can barely play on top of spaghetti, it's going to be a journey. But if I'm okay where I am, then I can take the journey. If I'm not okay, I won't take the journey, or I'll feel a constant distress. If you feel a distress about where you are, quote, stuck, you can tap on that distress. Mm-hmm. About, even though I am right here and that makes me feel, quote, like a failure, uncomfortable, upset with myself, I deeply and completely accept where I am right here, right now.
And I think it, what you said, Gary, it can help us feel very different and be very different from where we are now and feel accepting of ourselves along the way. But I don't think it makes us a different person. I think it lets us be our authentic self without all the layers of trauma and limiting beliefs and rules that may not fit us. I think it allows us to be who we really are.
So finding yourself, is it?
Yes.
Right. And would that stop things like jealousy and envy and things like that, you know, wanting to be somebody else then?
I think when we're not very connected with ourselves, we do feel more insecure. We notice more how other people have what appears to be more than we have. When we're very connected and feeling secure in ourselves, we can look over and say, wow, that's a really nice car. If I really wanted to have something like that, I probably could get it, as opposed to, what a bastard, he has a nice car.
Yeah. So tapping can help in so many ways.
Yes, it really can.
Kathy Vartuli and Rick Wilkes there. And now Carol Look looks at some of the things we need to check to be able to move on and get ourselves unstuck when EFT doesn't work.
Yes, and it's very perplexing because we've read about one-minute wonders and it seems to work on most of the people most of the time. But I always say to people, when it hasn't been working, there are just a few things to check that you can jiggle with that often make a big difference. So the first thing is the client, or are you, if you're doing it on yourself, are you really focused on the emotion? And are you really getting a before and after reading on the 0 to 10 point intensity scale? There's a reason that scale has been used for 15 years. Because if you can get that it's an 8, your anxiety when you think of going out in public, then you can measure it when you think about the same thing, going out in public, and then you can measure that it's gone down to a 6, but a lot of people use tapping without measuring, and so then they go, oh, I don't know, oh, it's, you know, and it feels kind of lukewarm. They get down to the 3s and the 4s, and they don't really have much to measure, and they're not measuring it against their original feeling. So that's really important. Are you focused on an emotion, right?
Right.
And are you measuring it?
Yeah. Can you intellectualize? Can you kind of intellectualize sometimes too much and not really get into your feelings? Then is that what you're saying?
That's what so many people do. And when you intellectualize, you're up in your head, and then you can't. You can neither measure, nor can you measure it going up or down, because you're just not in it, right? You're not in the feeling, which is why so many people say, "And where in your body do you feel the anxiety?" Because then you can tie it to your stomach. You know, the emotion is anxiety, and I feel the churning in my stomach.
Right. Have you ever had the experience when, you know, you work with somebody, you know, maybe a friend or a family member, and they get down really quickly to zero, but you're not quite sure whether they're being honest, in a sense?
Yes, I've certainly had that, and some people kind of play the game, so to speak. They just, you know, they want to, you know, just want to do the numbers and tap, but they're not really in it. And one of the reasons for that is they don't feel safe enough. So safety is a big issue. So if you don't feel safe, one of the things you can do is distract yourself. And one of the ways to distract yourself is to get back up into your intellectual head. Another thing, you know, maybe there's not a great match between the practitioner and the client. That's okay. That happens. But if you don't feel safe talking to that practitioner, you're not going to go into your body and your mind and your emotions. You're not going to want to do it.
Right,
and that's
right.
Not good or bad. It's just sort of information or feedback. If you're distracted, that tells you something.
Right.
You know, are you too afraid to go to the issue? So a lot of people email me and they say, this is what I've been tapping on and, you know, it's not working. I can tell in the sentences they're writing to me that they're not in it.
Yeah.
They are not emotionally plugged into the issue. I can hear it. I can see it in the lettering. You know, it's after a lot of practice, of course, you can see that and feel that. And they think they are in it.
Yeah.
But they're not. And the phone's ringing and the kids are playing outside and the dog's barking. They're not involved in it.
Yeah. A lot of people say they start for the first time, don't they, with EFT and say tap on a headache or something. And they're just saying, you know, even though I've got this headache as such.
Right. And that's a little bland. Yes, it's called a headache. That's the diagnosis. But what's actually happening? Even though I've been stressed out and upset about work and it's showing up in my throbbing head, that's more accurate. It's like sometimes people will take a diagnosis. They'll take the words that the doctor uses. And I say, forget what the doctor said. What do you say about your throbbing headache? You know, well, he called it the migraine syndrome. That's great. What do you say about it? Oh, it feels like someone took a hammer to my head. Well, then that's the language you use. So there are many reasons that people aren't tuned into the feelings. Distraction, fear, they don't really want to go there. It's not a good time to do the tapping because they're really appropriately distracted. They've got 5 minutes before they have to pick up their kid at school. You know, timing is important. But if it keeps not working, something's going on. And that's sometimes when, you know, we ask people to go to an outsider, you know, go to someone, to go to have a second pair of eyes.
Right.
Go to a practitioner, because if there's a place you don't want to go because it's scary, there's a real fear there, you're not going to go there.
Right. So is it important to have
the... the technique works. You and I, we know the technique works. The tapping isn't the problem.
Right. So is it important to have the right kind of space then, you know, when you invite people, if you're going to work with people, to have the right kind of atmosphere, the trust, like you say, and all the rest of that?
Definitely. You know, the client needs to feel safe in your office. It needs to be safe of interruptions. You need to communicate confidence and competence that you know what you're doing, you know, so, and have good boundaries, start on time. So all of that makes for an atmosphere where the client can come in and relax and go, whew, phew, now I'm here with someone who's going to help me. Let's do this together.
And if it really isn't working for people, what next? What can they do?
Well, they need to go through the checklist. One of the things that happens is people start with, let's say they have a fear of public speaking, and they say it's an 8. Well, what did they visualize to make it an 8? You better know as the clinician. And what they do is they visualize standing at the podium, and then they go tap, 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 tap. And the practitioner says, now what is the number? And they say it's still an 8. But the practitioner never asks, well, what are you visualizing this time? Because often what's happened is that 8 originally has gone down, and what the person is tuning into is seeing his or her boss in the front row. That's a different aspect. So many times people aren't clear. The practitioner isn't clear about the directions. Tune into something specific. Tell me what it is. What's the number? Tap, tap, tap. Tune into the same thing again. the same thing again. If you've gone through a checklist, you're truly in the feelings, you feel safe going there, your language is very accurate and clear, you're not being clinical, you're really being real with yourself, you feel safe, it's quiet enough to do the tapping, and it's not working, then I say go to somebody, because tapping works. That's not the problem. So I recommend then you really, you know, need to go to someone else. You know, and if you're really clear about the aspects and that you're, you know, not changing aspects in the middle of it. Because that's what people do with all sorts of issues, is they don't recognize that they've switched topics.
Right.
They think it's the same topic, but it's not the same topic.
Mm.
They started tapping on fear of taking off in the airplane. That goes way down, but when the clinician asks them how they're doing, they say it's terrible, and the clinician doesn't say, what are you tuning into to feel terrible? And the truth is they're tuning into a thunderstorm while they're up in the air.
Right, right.
But they just see it as this global, I'm afraid of flying.
So is that, you know, like what I would say, monkeys in trees, you know, like you're chasing a monkey that's going from one tree to the next.
Right. You really have to be careful about it. I think it's one of the biggest issues and challenges for people is they are chasing the monkeys and they don't realize it, so they don't realize that they do feel better because they're not going back to check. Go back, stand at the podium in your mind's eye again. Now how do you feel?
Right. Right. So, I mean,
very, very important. Yeah. That and vague language.
Yeah.
Oh, even though I have this issue with my brother. No, not this issue with my brother. What do you feel?
Right, right. So it's being very global, isn't it? And you also,
yes.
You emphasize there being specific and also looking at the different aspects in particular. And obviously, is it persistence as well?
Yes, always, always, always persistence. Because as we know, the tapping works. So if it's not working, tweak it. What's going on that would make it not work? Are you afraid to say that you feel envious of your colleague? Are you afraid to say you're mad at your brother? Are you, you know, what are you not entering?
Right. And, of course, the EFT takes time as well, and it's not always a one-minute wonder, yeah?
No. Part of what we are re-educating the public about is that it's not a one-minute wonder. You know, I do these supervision groups with practitioners. They're all getting calls from people off the street who read an advertisement on the Internet. And they're saying, oh, I hear you cure this in 2 minutes. Cure me. You know, that is what people are presenting to practitioners now. So we have to do some re-education, how long it might take, that it could take time, that it needs a certain amount of commitment from the client. This isn't just we're waving our magic wand and you're going to feel better. And a lot of the original stories from 10, 15 years ago are quite, I think they're a little bit too full of the one-minute wonder stories. It's not that they don't happen, but they are not the norm.
And if it isn't really working, can we also tap on the fact that it's not working?
Tap on the frustration that it's not working, that it works for everybody else but not you. I work with a lot of clinicians in supervision, and they will come to me and say, I have incredible results with other people, but it doesn't work on me. Well, then you know it's a resistance issue, right? An emotional resistance or difficulty having distance from the topic. And hard to, you know, I always say, Gary, it is hard to be the doctor and patient at the same time.
Right.
We often need objectivity from a coach or a practitioner to help us see. We don't know what we don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So it's good to work with somebody else.
Yes.
Emma Roberts now gives us more reasons as to why EFT might not be working.
There are a number of reasons why EFT might appear not to work. Before we even go there, I'd like to say that it does work. It's just a question of getting past these blocks. Now, the most obvious one is that you've come up against some form of psychological reversal, in which case you need to either go back to the karate chop or the sore spot point with your setup statement just as a beginning place. There may be some secondary reversals getting in the way, things such as safety and desiring and fear. So even though it's not safe for me to change,
right.
Even though it's not safe for other people if I get these changes, even though I don't want to, and that can be quite confrontational. You have to kind of say, I often say, just humour me whilst we go with this and just let's see what happens. Even though I don't want to change, I do want to change. You know, all in the setup statements. Even though it's too frightening for me, too frightening for somebody else. The other reason, and I would say probably the main reason of what happens when EFT doesn't work, is that you haven't got specific enough you need to break down the problem state into bite-sized chunks, into very small pieces. And they can sometimes there can be loads of these small pieces. Like if you're working with a specific memory and you think you've got specific enough and you're still not shifting it, well, are you focused in on the whole of that memory? Or are you looking at sort of 1 minute's worth of it or a second of it? Is it a look on somebody's face, voice tone? What is it that's holding that piece in place? Because the bottom line is that EFT does work. It's about getting to those core issues. Clever questioning skills are absolutely vital. You know, drop the why question, that's useless. If people knew, they wouldn't be there. But it's the, you know, how does it feel when it doesn't work? You know, where is that block? Where is it in the body? You can bring it into the body and get them to tap through the physical experience of not being able to move from this problem. And continuing to kind of be your own detective or be the other person's detective and dig deep. Sometimes we can go into, I think certainly with new practitioners, one of the dangers is going in too fast, and the conscious mind, the client's conscious mind, just puts up a block. This is too quick. You know, I don't want to do this. So sometimes you have to just be much gentler with them, just take it very, you know, a step at a time to ease people into this, because EFT does work and it works fast.
Right. Do you have to kind of honour people then when they are holding back in that way?
Absolutely. I mean, you can honour and challenge at the same time. It all depends on your rapport. But if you've got good rapport skills, if your client feels safe with you, then yes, you honour. It's never about going against the client. Always go with them. Yes, okay, I know it's not working for you now, so let's play around with this. What might it be that's blocking this moving? What would it feel like? What would it be like if you didn't have this problem anymore? What would you be doing that you're not doing now? You know, and Carol has a great question. You know, what's the upside of holding on to this problem?
Right.
You can ask it. You don't necessarily expect to get an answer, but the unconscious kind of goes into its own sort of what we call a transderivational search in NLP jargon. But it goes off and searches, and it'll come up with the solution or the answer in its own time. And I believe that the tapping kind of is a bridge to allow the unconscious to communicate that. So really clever questioning and being specific and getting that core issue.
Right. And do you find that people kind of switch from one thing to another, you know, like one issue mm-hmm. to another really quickly sometimes?
Absolutely. And that's fine. And you can't, you know, if somebody's moved on to something and it feels intense, you can't drag them back to where they started at that point. You have to follow where they are, but you need to have it in your mind to go back and test and check what's been going on where you started. And usually people don't switch from one to another until they've got at least some partial resolution on what the place they started at.
Right.
It's like the unconscious offers the next piece when it's ready. But you have to honour that. You can't say, no, hang on a minute, we're working on this. Don't you go with that. You go to where they've gone, but you remember to come back to where they started to test, because it's all in the testing.
Right. And kind of going back on what you were saying earlier, do we need to make sure that our statements are correct, you know, the way that we're doing it? Can we be too global in a sense?
I think we can be too global, yes, absolutely. Although I think that's very much the practitioner's skill, is to work out what's appropriate for the individual client. Sometimes global will work. I mean, I know that Gary Craig is very anti-global, and in general I would agree with him. But clients don't come in with specifically neatly packaged problems or particularly neatly packaged specific events to work with or core issues. So we often have to start global, but using... Right. Language skills and questioning skills and observation, getting it down. The global is the puzzle, and we want the pieces.
Right.
Okay. Like we're in that Robert Cialdini metaphor, the tabletop, and we want the legs supporting it.
So we're taking away those legs that are supporting the tabletop itself, yeah?
Absolutely. And we don't, you know, say the tabletop is something like depression. You know, that's a global issue in EFT terms. Now, you could tap away on feeling depressed for a long, long time. You might get a bit of headway, but you're not likely to resolve it. You may actually need antidepressants to help as well for a short period of time, but you need to get to the specific events that have led to the state of depression. It's, you know, it's not, we don't just wake up one morning feeling depressed. Things happen that lead us to that.
Right.
You know, it'd be that beliefs, events, whatever.
And finally, can you actually tap on being stuck as such?
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I say tap and rant.
Right.
Even though this isn't working for me, even though I'm stuck, even though EFT works for everybody else, but it doesn't work for me. all that sort of thing, and just say it as it is.
Right.
Often I'll do that with a client, even though this tapping thing's not going to help me. No way. You know, this is ridiculous. That's not going to work. I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to humour her sort of thing. And if you bring in a bit of humour into that, very often that will shift it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Again, you have to have rapport.
And do you think that sometimes people are trying to work on their own, maybe, and all they need to do really is just to find somebody to work with?
Yes, I mean, I think we can get a certain way on our own, but our unconscious mind protects us, and that's its job, actually. And sometimes we do need another, if you like, another energy system, for want of a better, you know,
right.
better analogy, yeah. to connect to hold us safe, and to be able to, I mean, I think the experienced practitioner's best skill, really, is the ability to hold a safe, loving space for the client to explore.
Right. And we can get stuck on the words and various other things. And is it good just to maybe just tune in to the body and the feelings and just tap on those?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think you can get stuck on your own words. I think as a practitioner, you can mess up the words for the client, and you can also help dig further and get communication with the unconscious. But, you know, I don't think working one-to-one actually can mess up your words, as long as you're just saying it as it is rather right. than as you think it should be. And, yeah, absolutely, working with the physical, it's always, you know, it's a great fail-safe.
That's Emma Roberts, and now Maggie Adkins has more ideas on getting unstuck.
Well, there are a few ideas that I have that I've used in the past and still use. I think that one thing, first of all, if you get stuck and you're working on yourself, that may be the message to find a skilled practitioner, even if it's only for one session. Someone who can really see the trees and the forest sort of thing.
Right.
So that's one of my suggestions. If you're working on yourself and you get stuck, maybe see a skilled practitioner. And, of course, you don't have to be limited by geography anymore, because phone sessions work fabulous. I personally have clients in your country, the UK and Europe and the US and all over Australia. So that'd be the first thing. The second thing would be, if you're working on yourself and you get stuck, I would write it down. If you're not writing it down, it can really help to bring in that sense of the physical writing, that movement, that bringing it out in the physical world. It can stop the tape loop of the mind, and it also helps you to see more clearly when you can literally see. So that's another thing that I would say. Write down the issue, top of page, and then start to write down all the aspects.
Right.
Also, if you're stuck, you could be working on something too big. One issue at a time, lots of different aspects within that issue.
Right.
You know, let's say there's a car accident. Whether you feel it was your fault, whether you feel the other driver was drunk, the actual injuries, whether somebody said don't go out New Year's Eve because it's snowing and there'll be drunks on the road, whether, you know, all these different aspects, how you feel about it, what actually happened, what it means to you now, what it meant to you then, what you might have lost. So to write down all the aspects of one issue, but to stay with one issue. Very important to stay with one issue at a time. So you can feel stuck. Actually, that would be more overwhelmed or confused, which you could also call stuck if you're working with too much. Like I asked someone to be very specific in a class one time, and she got nowhere, and she wouldn't say what it was. So at a break, I went up and I said, do you mind telling me what you were working with when we were working with specific? And she said, oh, okay, I can tell you, I just didn't want to tell the group. She was working on being a success in singing in public. There is nothing specific about that.
Right.
So of course she couldn't get anywhere.
Mm.
So learning to be specific, writing down, and the last thing I'm going to say about it is, you know, when I learned EFT, which was in 99, I believe, I was with Gary Craig in 99 in Las Vegas. I actually learned it a little before that. Gary stressed, if you don't know what to do, do constricted breath.
Right.
I'm not talking about collarbone breathing. I'm talking about simply being with the breath. Even though I have this constricted breath, I deeply and completely accept myself. A couple rounds of the breath can do a lot of things.
Right.
One of them is it can just be that open space where you get unstuck, where something becomes clear about the issue. I've seen that happen many times.
Right.
The other thing is, you know, it can just make you calmer. Sometimes constricted breath might bring up some body sensitivities, but if you keep going, they usually clear up, or they will give you very, very good information. So those are all ideas for if you're stuck to look at, you know.
Right. Maggie Adkins there, and now Brad Yates talks about how we may need to go back to the basics.
Yeah, I agree with Gary Craig in saying that it's good to have the foundation, to learn where it came from, to start out there so that you can build upon that. But you don't need to stick with that. Each person's going to have their own way of doing it. Each person's going to find their own way of using EFT. And, you know, I, as long as the intent is there, the positive intention of clearing, I think that any form of EFT is valid. But I certainly believe that having that foundational work and learning the very basics of EFT as a starting point is important.
Mm. And you say intention. What do you mean by intention?
Well, having that positive healing intention of creating that emotional freedom. You know, if somebody goes in with an intention of wanting to change somebody for, you know, if I wanted to change somebody because I wanted them to be different for my sake, then the intention is not clear. But if I'm doing it purely to be there for that person, to help them find what they're looking for, if I really have their highest good in mind, then that's where the magic really happens.
Mm. I can remember a video, I think her name was Beth. Do you recall the video, Gary Craig's video, some years ago, where she wanted to heal the world, as it were, and that became a bit of a problem?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I created a website some time ago called The Plot to Save the World. And I got some negative feedback about that, saying, the world doesn't need to be saved. And I said, you know, well, it was tongue-in-cheek. It was coming up with a funny name. But, you know, making the resource available for people who want to find ways to make a positive difference. But we can't insist on what a positive difference is for different people. Mm, so we can't tell people what it is for them.
Mm, so is there a danger that you could get hooked up in that kind of savior aspect?
If we start to decide what we want for other people, you know, it's like the old thing about the golden rule. People go back and forth on, you know, the golden rule is wrong. It's not about treat people the way that you want to be treated. It's treat people the way they want to be treated. Now, I like to think that, okay, if you take the golden rule in a broader sense of treat other people the way you want to be treated, as in, you know, with love and respect, however that shows up for them. It's not necessarily, you know, treat them specifically the way you want to be treated. So it's having that intention of helping people find what is their best outcome and how they get to decide that, as opposed to my deciding, you know, everyone should be a particular way, shape, or form. You know, that's where we get into religious wars, when I decide, well, the only way that everyone's going to be saved is if they all believe the same way I do about God. To push my beliefs on anyone doesn't seem right. So it's having that positive intention to have people find what is truly best for them, and trusting that, you know, spirit will move them to what is really best for them, rather than me deciding what that is.
How do you deal with people that are reversed against their own healing?
It's coming at it from a place of acceptance and understanding, coming from the NLP presupposition of everyone is doing the best they can at any given moment. So knowing that when someone is reversed about that, that's the best they can do at that moment. And my job is to work with them and try to find a way around that, recognizing that there's nothing wrong there. They're not doing it wrong. I'm not doing it wrong. It's just that that's where they're at in that moment. And my job is to try to find a way around that to make it safe for them. Because every issue that we have is there because our unconscious mind believes that it's protecting us. It's somehow keeping us safe. So my job is to help a person find a safe way of healing, to find that it is safe to heal.
And are there some people that you can't heal, that you know that you can't work with?
Well, there are some people that I'm not going to be as effective with as other people are. It's like with music. I can play jazz or rock and roll or whatever, and if someone else prefers classical, then they're not going to enjoy it. You can go to a David Bowie concert, but if you're not into rock and roll, it doesn't matter how well he plays, it's just not going to work for you. And sometimes the person's not in the mood, you know, for that particular type of music or whatever. So there are times that I'm not going to be as effective with someone else. And that's just because that's where both of us are at that moment.
And so in time, maybe they will come around to it.
Yeah, they'll come around to it. And it's also knowing that it's okay for them to be where they're at. You know, they're in that moment, there's something there, trusting that they're going through a process that is important for their life journey. And I can't decide what someone's life journey is. I can't force anyone to heal if that's not where they're at that moment. I can only do the best I can and provide the tools that I have, use my own gifts and talents to help them reveal their own gifts and talents. And also knowing that, you know, there have been things that in the past that I used EFT for that didn't work at that time, but worked later. And it's like, okay, there was a reason why I had to go through that process. There's a reason why it took longer, because there were things that I learned about myself in that process. So understanding that there's something of value there, even if it's not exactly the result you're looking for at that time.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've got EFT people listening at the moment that maybe just starting out, and maybe they're not getting the results that they thought that they were going to get. What kind of things would they need to tap on, do you think?
Well, certainly tapping on getting out of your own way. We can get so uptight, and there's certainly been times where I'm working with someone and, you know, we're trying to bring their SUD scale down and it's just not happening. And if I start to get uptight and my ego gets into it, it's like, oh, I'm not doing well enough. I need to force a change here. When I start doing that, I'm blowing it. You know, if I'm trying to make it happen for the sake of my ego, then I'm missing out on what's there, as opposed to being really open. And when I'm really open, then we find what's really important and we find what's necessary. So when you're starting out recognizing, yeah, okay, you're not going to always get the results you want. And this is true with anyone. You know, go to a workshop or see the best working. You know, you can go to a Gary Craig workshop and see him working with someone live and watch, you know, that SUD scale be very stubborn. So recognizing there are times that things get in the way of the healing. So forgiving yourself, too, for not, you know, the thing with EFT is that it is so simple and so rapid sometimes that we can sometimes build up our expectation that it doesn't matter what someone brings to us, we should be able to tap, and within 5 minutes, they are completely free of that. And that does happen. We do have those one-minute wonders, but it doesn't happen all the time, and it doesn't mean there's something wrong. It does work. It just sometimes works a little more slowly, and that doesn't necessarily mean there's something wrong. Just right. Sometimes there's a process to something. Things sometimes take longer.
So if you're looking at your client and they're kind of giving you a blank look because you've done some tapping and they're thinking, well, nothing's happening, where do you go from there?
Then I start to look at what I might be missing. I'll go for what a feeling is. You know, if I'm not getting the thoughts there, I'll, you know, have them go inside and check and see what thoughts and memories are coming up, and also what emotions and what physical sensations, and I'll start looking for a different door. If I'm not finding that I'm making headway, then it's simply a matter of, okay, there's a different approach I need to take. I need to find a different door. Maybe going away slightly from that issue to maybe something else, or maybe just looking at it in a totally different way. And sometimes that's where I'll bring in sort of you know, ridiculous wording sometimes, really coming out with something extreme to sort of try to click something that we've been missing.
And like you said earlier, you talked about using humor as well.
Yeah, if I can, you know, remembering that each issue is there because of a safety issue. You know, if someone is having a hard time letting go of an issue, there's some safety involved there. So if I can, you know, sort of, you know, shake that and bring up some humor and sort of get them off guard, then there creates an opening for something else to happen where they don't feel quite so wary, quite so on guard.
Are we working with the unconscious mind then as we're tapping?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're working with both the conscious and the unconscious. And, you know, with the tapping, we're also working with the unconscious at a physical level. Someone asked me about this recently, and I said, we're working with the unconscious mind. We're accessing the unconscious mind through the physical, because in the feeling that we have, the flow of the energy through the meridians, we can get a gauge on where the unconscious is. And as we balance out that energy, that affects the unconscious. It makes the unconscious feel much better, feel much safer, and allows it to see things in a way that is different than what it had been holding on to in the past.
My thanks there to Brad Yates from bradyates.net, also Emma Roberts from the EFTcenter.com, and center is spelt in the English way, also Maggie Adkins from maggieadkins.com.au, Carol Look from attractingabundance.com, Rick Wilkes and Kathy Vartuli from thrivingnow.com, and finally Jackie Crooks from beacontraining.co.uk.